Good morning to everyone. Today, October 28th, we're going to be continuing with the topic of Lashon Hara. We'll pick up from last week. We'll start just in a few moments. We'll be working from Maimonides' work in Mishnah Torah and also from the Talmud in Erechim. Check to make sure that everyone's picking up the sound clearly. So once you hear the audio, just type audio OK at the bottom of your screen. Section, so you'll be able to hear it in its entirety in the recorded form. And that's usually posted within a half an hour after the class is concluded. Sources today will be Rambam's Hilchos Deos, his Laws of Personality Traits. It's the last chapter, chapter 7. And also the Talmud and Erechin, which is page 15a. Sharna, thank you very much for the confirmation. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Cal. How are you?
Beautiful fall day with lots of leaf color.
Yeah, same here.
Temperatures cool off there a little bit?
Oh yeah, quite a bit.
Oh.
Yeah. It was getting a little bit too hot for me. But 65 degrees was, you know, a little too balmy.
It's That's pretty warm for October.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful day. Okay, so we're picking up with Lashon Hara. We'll continue with what we had started last week. Any questions or comments before we actually get going? Or anything we pretty much we good from last week?
I think we're good here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, there was one thing which I omitted last week. There were a lot of points, but thankfully I covered all of the ones I wanted to, except for one. We'll be talking about, again, there were four categories of Lashon Hara, the main category meaning the one of the four forms. So that was the where a person just gossips and he tells over what he heard. He doesn't originate content, and what he says over is not even evil. It's just factual. But he can say it, and the end result will have devastating effects. It can be like the case of Doeg the Edomite, who told over just factual information, which ended up Saul, King Saul, had told Doeg then to kill that city of the priests because of that information, because Doeg had said something. So even though what he said was not a negative statement. And also, if you look further on, you'll see that the Maimonides talks about something called Avak Lashon Hara, meaning the dust of Lashon Hara. So it's not essentially evil speech, but it's like the dust of it, meaning it's a small quantity of it. It partakes of it. And that is where you say things, for example, you tell a person that he should be as he is now, not as he is in the past. So it's a little difficult because that one, it sounds like you're talking to the person directly. When he classifies this thing of dust of Lashon Hara, he says, what's the case? One who says, and this is chapter 7, law 4 in the personality traits. And he says, do you have the English there, by the way, Doug?
Yes.
Why don't you read that first two lines there in 7:4? Let's see how that has the translated.
Chapter 7, verse 4. Oh, wait a minute. I'm on the wrong track tape here. There are certain matters which are considered, quote, the dust of Lashon Hara, unquote. What is implied? For example, a person says, who will tell so-and-so to continue acting as he does now?
Uh-huh.
Or, do not talk about so-and-so, I do not want to say what happened.
Right, so you're not saying something negative.
Right.
Meaning, who will tell to this such and such guy that he should be as he is now? Meaning, you're implying that now is better than before. So by implication, you're saying something negative about his past. Or by implication, the next case is who will tell, or someone says, be quiet about so-and-so. I don't want to make known what occurred. So you're implying that something negative, so that itself is considered a Avak Lashon Hara. Because even though you're not saying what the negative is, you are giving the a negative reputation to the person. Okay. But it's interesting, if you go back earlier, one of the things that he talks about is the four categories are where you just gossip. It's not slander. The second case is slander. The third case is where you destroy the reputation of somebody through lies. Because the slander has to be true. And then if you slander somebody but it's lies, that's called destroying reputation. And the last category was slander, but someone who does it to the nth degree. I mean, he completely, he doesn't just take one jab at a person, but he obliterates the person's personality. And one of the things he said is that his forefathers, or his parents, they are such and such people. So what exactly is he doing when he says that? He doesn't do that in the regular case of slander. Regular case of slander is where a person merely states one element of negativity about another person. But a person who is a master of slander, that means he does a complete like assassination on the personality. He says that he's heard negative things about him, and he says, and this is what he did, and his fathers were so and so people. So what my question is, what is this negativity when you say who his parents were?
Is that in Hilchos Theos?
Yeah, that is in the same chapter we're in, but that's in Law 2, 7-2. I mean the Baal Lashon Hara. It's about halfway through, Law number 2. He says, but the master of Lashon Hara, this is the one who sits and he says, such and such did this guy do, and this is who his parents are, and this is what I heard about him. And he says words of derision.
The question is, why is he bringing in the parents?
Yes.
Is he trying to further destroy him by association? That is to say, well, look, you know, I mean, his, you know, parents were garbage collectors, and now he's a garbage collector, or I don't know, something that the person is considering derogatory, and so by tying to the parents, he's sort of saying it's inevitable that he would be like this as well.
Okay. So what is that element? And then Rosora and Joshua are also saying similar things. They're saying that he is not being given any opportunity. And Josh is saying that he's bad from birth. He's all bad. But let's try to define why he's doing this.
It's justification, isn't it?
Justification? What do you mean?
He's justifying why, or giving more validation to why this person is unworthy. Or
so how is that different than just saying the guy does bad things? Who's involved in bad activities, you know, destruction or hurting people? What's the difference? There's another quality here that is being presented.
It sounds like it's not just a temporary thing. It sounds like it's inevitable.
Okay, so why do I want to do that? Why do I want to say that his bad is inevitable?
It's almost like he's in a category or a box or something and is not given any opportunity to change or to move out of that.
Agreed. Rosora is also saying that there's no possible defense that this person can present for himself. That's true.
Looking for something more.
A little bit more, yeah. I want to know, in terms of what is the different quality that this is reflective of the word who's speaking. What is he doing different with that statement?
Well, it would seem like it's revealing that maybe the difference between a person in Category 3 and a person in Category 4, he's not just repeating information. He clearly has an agenda to nail this person.
Right.
Bring in the parents if he didn't.
So how is this nailing the person more? When you say nail, just elaborate. Maybe that's what maybe I'm just not understanding you.
Well, he's clearly got an agenda of, I'm not just passing along information, I am trying to destroy this person.
Okay, good.
And I'm going to do it by not only saying that he's bad, but even that his parents are bad.
Right, so saying that the parents are bad, we're basically saying that this is his definition, because again, the person who just speaks Lashon Hara in general is that he is just saying one thing bad about the person. So you can either want to just take a jab at somebody, or you could want to completely wipe out the person, a total destruction. Meaning that's the quality that you have over here when he talks about the parents, because you're saying from his very inception, it's not possible that there's anything good. One thing is to say a person has a stain on his garment. Another thing is to say the person is covered in mud.
Right.
So there's a greater animosity that the person reflects by really looking to destroy the person. So it's almost like killing him, but you're doing it through speech. You don't want there to be any possibility of good. You want nobody to associate with him. You want him to be totally obliterated. Right, so that's a nuance, but it does bring out the Baal Lashon Hara that it's not just merely a vent of a certain aggression that he has, but he can't tolerate the existence of the person. It's a different thing altogether. One is a person who's a little aggressive, another person who can't tolerate somebody else. Completely two different people. That's why it's its own category. That's why the Baal Lashon Hara, the one who is looking. He can't tolerate the other person. He has to completely wipe him out. It's a whole different level. Meaning to say, his entire personality, the next step we have to say is then, why does he do this? What is the difference in the personality between a person that just takes a single jab and a person who has to completely destroy the person? Let's see if we can answer that now. What's the difference? Let's look at the speaker, the one who's speaking now. What can we say about him that's different than the person who just takes a single jab? The person who cannot tolerate the other person, that reflects on him. But what does it reflect? Now we understand what he's doing. Let's understand why.
It seems like the person that takes a single jab might just have an issue with that particular circumstance. But a person who tries to destroy someone totally, it speaks more about that person as needing to. That's where he gets this whole sort of feeling of being great comes from, the complete destruction of somebody else. He doesn't have it for himself.
He doesn't have what for himself?
He's only on or only feels good about himself at the destruction of someone else.
Okay. All right, we'll take that just a little further and suggest that the person, his entire value system is now corrupted. Because if you take two people, one guy says aggression now and then about other people. All right, that's not his whole nature. But if you see that a person finds another individual intolerable, the word intolerable means that this matters most to the person. This is the value system that overrides everything else in this person's life. Right, that was Haman. Haman could not stand the fact that Mordechai did not, the times of Purim. So he couldn't stand that Mordechai didn't even budge. He didn't recognize him, and he didn't stand up, but he didn't even move when Haman came by. Everybody else was standing up at the order of the king. Some say he had the idolatry around his neck. Some say he was the idol himself. But the fact that it bothered him so much that it completely consumed him. Right? We use that term when we talk about anger and deep feelings. It completely consumes the person. Why? Because that is the primary and the essential focus of his life, the self. So when he's bothered by somebody else, now you're talking about the competitive realm. Whenever a person is bothered by somebody else, so he is bothered only because he cares about competition. He lives his life based on a barometer of how am I compared to others, like you were saying, Cal. But what I'm just adding is that this is the primary framework of value that this person has. Not God, not wisdom, but the self. So a person who's a Baal Lashon Hara, that means that something is completely eating away at him because this is what he cares about the most. Another person doesn't really care about whether another person is successful or not. He's happy for them. If he's a perfected person, he's happy for the other person. Like Rabbi Chait had explained a few months ago, that he is as happy with somebody else, their success, as he is with his own success. That's a proper person. That's like Avram Avinu. Okay? But it's Abraham, but in terms of this person, like a Haman, so when the self is the primary focus, so now it's intolerable that somebody else is superior in your calculations. And you'll have to do everything you can to remove it completely. Even if part of the person, even if a remnant of them is still there, if I didn't completely destroy their personality, that means I'm still bothered. That means that there's still something eating away at me. That reflects on my value system. You see how it's the next step? First, we were saying, what exactly is the person doing when he talks about parents? So that's the what, meaning what exactly is that type of a degradation? That's the type of degradation where you're trying to say you are obliterating the entire personality. Because from birth, he was no good. Bad blood, his parents were evil, he has no chance. Good, so that, now I understand what this person is doing. He's trying to completely obliterate him. Meaning the other person's intolerable. Then we have to ask the next question. Why is that? Why is that? Because we're trying to understand the human nature that speaks Lashon Hara, meaning the Baal Lashon Hara, at this juncture. That's what we're trying to understand. So we can't just end off by saying what he's doing. We have to understand why. What is the psychological motivation? Now we see the psychological motivation. His entire value system is, how am I when I'm pitted up with other people? Am I a top or not? That's what he cares about most. And I've seen this side by side with people who are leaders in Torah. And you can be very smart. You can have a lot of wisdom. But what's the real motivation in that wisdom? Sometimes what it is merely is lo mid lakata. I mean, you're learning in order to put other people down. You want to have more knowledge. So I believe what we say, excuse me, in that case, such a person has no share in the world to come. So that means his learning is not for the sake of wisdom. He's not purely interested in God. His interest is purely the self. So anytime something gets in the way of the self, and then that's really a... you have this another phrase. What does it say? That the hell hath no fury like a woman scorned? Right? That's even in the... even in the cultural statements, you see that there is this concept of someone who's scorned as a intolerance in terms of the self. So that's a whole different level. Okay. Any questions?
Rabbi, am I correctly understanding that you said you've observed this even at high levels of Torah scholarship?
Yes, yes. I was actually at a class once, I don't know, 15 years ago, and there was a rabbi there who was giving me a class, and someone had spoken up and corrected him on something, and he quoted something from Eve, you know, an obscure book, which is not really learned so much, but Eve, you know, Book of Job is part of the Torah. And I remember clearly that the rabbi said, you telling me you know more than me about it. You're telling me that you studied Job? He said it with like this. And then it ended up that this rabbi also said that who can see further, the giant or a midget sitting on the giant's shoulders? Meaning he was comparing himself to Rashi. He was saying that he knew more than Rashi. I remember clearly. It was just I was completely floored by the arrogance and the fact that he was intolerable of the other person, and then he stormed out at the end because the other person was holding his ground. That this is really he was making. He was saying, "You can't say that you're better than Rashi," and he was completely bothered by this. I mean, he was fuming, and he just stormed out and he left. And it was you see that this is something which every human being has the potential to do. So unless a person works in their midos, just the knowledge alone you know, at times it's not going to really reach the person. Sometimes people have the ego is very powerful in certain people, and they don't see it. And that's an important thing. I mean, reflection and tshuva, it's not just the learning. That's why you have a whole institution of repentance. And that's what the Torah builds into it, one of the commands. You should rebuke your brother. If you see a person doing something, you have to rebuke them. Now, of course, that's a whole study in itself. When, where, how. But the knowledge itself, the person has to, it could be at a distance from the person. The person can use it for the sake of his own ego. Person has to be able to say, I don't know. Person has to be able to be humble. And that's all the teachings of King Solomon, that the beginning of Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. But if the person is just looking for to elevate the self, so, and it's not such a, it is, thank God, a minority of cases with people who are Torah educators. But you see this in everyday life. People, and when you listen to people talk, you'll see a lot of what they say is merely the defense of the ego, or building up the ego, or putting themselves in a good light. Even a lot of times you see a person go up to another person to say hello. What they're really looking for is the other person to say hello back. It's an interesting phenomenon. And let me see what Brazor is writing. Yeah, what about talking about an event without mentioning the identity of the protagonist of the fact? That's okay. If you don't mention names, then it's all right. Like I'm doing right now.
Rabbi, what about situations where you're in a business team and or you're a manager of people and you're under, you know, a certain obligation to work with them and deal with performance issues and so forth, which almost necessitates sometimes having to share with one person a situation with another? If your motivation is not about trying to put the person down or something along that line, but try to find a way to deal with that person or apprise someone of something that may be coming down the road or whatever, is that acceptable?
Yeah, that would be okay. I mean, first of all, a person working for a company has to know that they have a promise to work a certain way. That's part of what the agreement was. Nobody would hire somebody without there being a mutual understanding of what the obligation of the person is. And I assume you're talking about a case where the person fell below what they were obligated. So now, you know, a couple of things. First of all, you're helping out the owner of the company that he shouldn't be losing money, and you're informing him, listen, you know, this is, it's not because you want to put down the person, you're trying to help them out. This guy is not filling the job. And I mean, I gotta think. I'm just thinking out loud here. Saying negative things about the person. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's another, if there's any other, there may be other sources that I have to look at. Let me hold on to that for and look into that. Intuitively, I just can't see it, really. I mean, 99%, that's not going to be a case of lashon hara. I mean, you have an obligation. If that's even the position that you have, and then the person who's falling below understands that that's part of the structure of the business, so even more so, it's not something that's being done as a personal attack. I can't see there being a problem at all. I'll look into it, though.
Okay, thank you.
I think even in that situation, though, you'd have to be clear about what your motivation is.
Yeah, of course. And Chana, let me see, Chana's asking a question online. She's saying, can you say a bit more about the difference between Lashon Hara and Toelis? What is Toelis, Chana? Unless you're talking about Rechilis. That's what we were talking about. Is that what you mean, Chana? Charna. Had your name wrong. Charna Peril. You mean Rechilis? I'm not sure what you mean by Toelis. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is take up a portion of the Talmud, which is in the Talmud Erechin, and discusses Lashon Hara. This is Erechin 15a.
I'm sorry, the tractate again, Rabbi?
Erechin. It'll probably be spelled something like A-R-C-H-I-N.
Okay.
And,
not Eruvin, E-R-U-V-I-N?
No.
Okay.
It's more like A-Y-R, Air, C-H-I-N. That's how you'd probably spell it. Air, Fin. Eruvin that you were talking about is regarding Shabbos.
Okay.
That's connected with laws of Shabbos. Okay. And just to answer Sharna, your Rechilis we talked about last week, Sharna, is merely gossiping, hearing from one person and telling that over to somebody else. It does not have to be negative information. It's just the spread of gossip. And that's something which is that's the main category. Okay. So now we're in Erechin. And it says that the fate of the Jews in the desert was not sealed except because of Lashon Hara. The 40-year sentence that they should die in the desert and not get the land, which they were about to enter, was sealed because of the sin of Lashon Hara. Okay. So, interesting ideas here. Brief little ideas. Let's go through them. So the Gemara asks, well, how do you know this? How do you know that it was because of Lashon Hara? Maybe it's because they just reached a certain level of corruption. They tried God on 10 different occasions, and this, when the spies came back after searching out the land and they said that we can't take it over, unlike God said that we can go in and we'll inherit the land, the spies came back, the 10 of the 12 spies were evil, and they came back and they said, no, we can't take the land. So because of that, they incited a riot. They said the people there are so large that we're like grasshoppers in their eyes, and the fruit is even strange. Look how large the fruit is. So everything was really to be a benefit. They twisted. And they were scared about the stature of the people. But really, they should have been convinced that if God says something's going to happen, that's it. So the Gemara asked, well, maybe it's not because of Lashon Hara. Maybe it's just because this sin was now the 10th of a number of sins ever since they left Egypt. And that was it. That's why God finally decided it's the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. So that's what the Talmud says. Why? Maybe because their fill of sin wasn't complete until this point. And they quote Rabbi Hamanuna, who says that God does not punish from a person until he is full of the sin, until he reaches a certain point, a certain capacity level. And he quotes a verse from Job. When he is full, then he is grieved, then he is given the pain, which means when he's full of sin, then God afflicts him. So you see, there's a verse that supports this idea, and even God tells to Abraham that when he's talking about the future, he says that your children will be in servitude to 400 years, and an alien nation is going to make them subservient and make them work in bondage for 400 years, and then I'll take them out and bring them to the land, but not until that point, because the fill of sin of the inhabitants of the land of Canaan will not have reached the level where I could punish them yet. So even there you have a second case that you see that there's a true idea. So God waits. So who says it's because of the Lashon Hara? Maybe it just happened to be that Lashon Hara was the 10th sin, and that's what broke the camel's back. And we have two proofs. Reish Lakish argues, and he says, no, the verse says, quote, and God is speaking about the Jews. And he says, you tested me this 10 times. So he explains, the word this is not necessary, but this must be referring to this 10th one, meaning it's isolating the 10th one. God could have just said, you tested me 10 times, and now that's it, you don't get the land. But God says, no, you tested me this 10 times. So this is extra, and therefore must be referring to this 10th one, which means that the fate was not sealed except because of this one, meaning the Lashon Hara. So he concludes from explaining the verse's word, the extra word, that no, it really is because of Lashon Hara, and it's not just because it's the 10th. Alright, so we have to understand what the dispute is. What are the two views? So what's the first view? That just this concept in general, that until the sin is, and meaning to say that Reish Lakish is not arguing on this principle that God waits until the sin is full. But there are certain times when you don't even need that. And just because of Lashon Hara itself, that will warrant a certain response, a punishment. Other times, God will wait until there's a certain quantity. So both are true. So Reish Lakish is saying, in this case, it's not because it was a straw that broke the camel's back here, because Lashon Hara itself is qualitatively different and more severe. So let's think about the idea in general, though. What is this idea that there's a God waits? I mean, a personal sin, God doesn't punish. He sins again, God doesn't punish. He does it a number of times. Then finally God punishes. What is this mode of operation that God exhibits, that God holds as being a good thing?
Would that be a huge amount of patience waiting for giving us an opportunity to see the error of our ways and to repentance?
That exhibits God's mercy.
Right, true. Look on the flip side, what would be a problem if he didn't do this?
Well, if we all got punished immediately for everything we did wrong, it'd be a very empty planet.
Or, it could be full, but you'd be missing something else. And I don't mean physical objects being missed. I mean there'd be some other feature that God really wants that would not be present in such a scenario. What would be lost if every time I ate a ham sandwich, a lightning bolt came down and struck me? That's usually the argument.
Opportunity for free will would be missing.
Exactly. Right, that's what I think this is pointing to. That the fact that God waits, it gives a person the opportunity to see what's wrong with the thing itself that you were saying before. But you turn the question backwards many times. It really helps. I mean, I'll give you an example. Just in terms of method, sometimes if we can't define something well, so if we're trying to do it in the positive, let's say, for example, I'm trying to define what exactly is a door. So I'm trying to define the real definition of a door. So if I'm having trouble doing that, I'll say to myself, well, if there wasn't a door, what wouldn't I have? So then right away, well, there's no way to get inside the house. Exactly. So now we understand that the door is really an object for entrance. It's not necessarily something that swings. It's not something that has a certain substance. It doesn't necessarily have to have a glass window. It doesn't even need a doorknob. It doesn't even need hinges. You can have different ways. But if you ask it in the reverse, you say, well, what am I missing if I don't have a door? Then it points you, sometimes that clarity, it just brings it to the fore. So that's what we did over here. We can't really say what is this method that God is using in terms of waiting for the person's fill and then punishing him. So then we ask reverse. Well, what would be the case if after every single time I ate a ham sandwich, a lightning bolt would come down and strike me? So then you saw right away the contrast is a very good method, I find, for helping us to arrive quickly at a real definition of a certain phenomenon. Like, for example, if you want to define what's the definition of a leaf on a tree? Difficult. I mean, what do you say about a leaf on a tree? It's green, it grows. I mean, you can say that about a lot of things. It's green, it grows. But if you think about, okay, what would I be missing if I didn't have a leaf? Then right away you struck, oh, there's no shade. Right? Or the birds that make the nest, they're exposed. So the contrast in the mind all of a sudden brings about a very clear function of a leaf. So it's a very good method. It's a very good tool. Okay. All right, so that's the first view. The first view is that maybe it's not because of the Lashon Hara itself. Maybe it's just because it was the straw that broke the camel's back. But Reish Lakish comes in and he disagrees. He says, no, that is a true phenomenon. And I'm not going to argue the verse in Job or where God spoke to Abraham. But it says here you have a separate problem. Here the verse says that you tested me this 10 times. The word this is not necessary in the verse. God could have just said, you tested me 10 times, and now you're getting punished. This means it's trying to isolate something. It's isolating this 10th occurrence of Lashon Hara. All right, so it's basically a way of deriving it from the verse. Okay, let's go further. Any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Next it says, so Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Partha, said, look and see how great is the force of Lashon Hara. How do we learn, where do we learn this from? We learn it again from the spies. And what is his teaching? He says, just like a person that speaks bad on wood and stones, meaning the land of Israel is comprised of wood and stones, right? So he says also, somebody who brings out a bad name on his friend, certainly, how much more is it going to be a terrible thing? Look what happened. Just because they spoke about wooden stones, they had to die in the desert after 40 years of wandering. Now, wooden stones are not animate, is basically what he's saying. So how much more a person speaks about his friend? Okay. So what do you have to say about that statement?
Rabbi, I'm not following what you're asking.
What type of response do you have to that? To that equation? He made an a fortiori argument, which is from the lesser to the stronger. So if I say that if a baby can pick up, you know, a 10-pound weight, certainly an adult can. So if I say that people who spoke bad about wood and stones get punished, certainly if they speak bad about people. So I'm not giving any lead over here. I'm just asking you just to think about that and let me know if anything strikes you. Any type of question or comment?
The only thing that jumps out at me is it an apples and oranges thing? I mean, if you speak poorly about an object, does that automatically presume that speaking poorly about a person, which is a completely different entity, would be incorrect? In other words, is that a proper conclusion?
Right, exactly. That was exactly my question, too. What type of equation is this? What's wrong with speaking about wood and stones, anyway? I mean, take it a step further. It's not only it's apples and oranges, for sure, but how could you even start by saying that it was a bad thing that they spoke about inanimate objects? If I start talking about my desk where I sit and I work or I read, and I start saying negative things about it. What's wrong with that? Why is that even? Why does it register as a negative action?
Lack of gratification for what you have been provided?
Okay, right. Right, so that's the answer. That they didn't speak about anything which can have any shame or hurt as a added evil. But they did speak about something which was, it was negative. They definitely were not appreciative. So there was something lacking over there. Because even this, I mean, all of creation, it's creation, it's from God. So that's that I think you could say is the, it makes sense to now make an equation. But then if you speak about a person, certainly. So if people in the desert spoke about inanimate things and they got punished, certainly if you speak about animate things, meaning the focal point is the something which is not animate, so there's no feeling, they don't hear about it, they don't get hurt by it. Right, these, the wooden stones, that element doesn't exist there. That's why he's picking an inanimate element to say what the Lashon Hara was. He's trying to contrast the feature of inanimate to animate. Okay?
Okay.
So he says, he's saying, look how, that's his proof that the power of Lashon Hara is so bad, meaning the evil that it carries. Even when you didn't even speak about something that can hear you. So certainly, because speech is something which is heard. So the very act, we have to look at and see where does the damage lie. Well, if you're telling me that there's no damage, excuse me, you're telling me that there's damage, even when the thing can't hear you? Well, certainly if the thing can hear you. So then, the Talmud asks a question on his view, and he says, wait a minute, why are you saying that this is the reason why that they're punished? Dilma, perhaps, as Rabbi Chanina, the son of Rav Papa, said, a great thing, Davar Gadol, a great thing to despise speak at that moment. Meaning when they came back and they gave a bad report about the land. Right? When they were accusative about the land. So he says that Rabbi Chanina, the son of Rabbi Papa, said, quote, a great thing to despise speak at that moment. Because it's written. It's written in the Torah, in Bamidbar, in Numbers. Quote, they say, for they are stronger than us. When they came back and they were speaking about the giants that they saw there, so they said that the people are stronger than us. So he actually takes the word us. He says, don't read the word us, but read the word him. It's the same letters. Mi menu is us. Mi menu is him. So he's saying, what they were saying? They said they are stronger or not than us. That's the plain reading, but you can interpret what they're saying to mean they are stronger than him. Meaning who? Stronger than God. Because what they were basically saying is that God's promise is not going to come to fruition. And he wants to say, that's the real sin over here. Meaning the owner of the house can't take out his vessels, which euphemistically means that God who owns the land of Canaan, he can't take out the current inhabitants. Okay. And what does he say? They say no. Rava comes back and says, no, Reish Lakish said, the verse says, what? The verse says, and the men who, and they died, they were killed, the men who spoke evil about the land. So he says, you see what the verse says. The verse doesn't say they spoke about God. It says when they finally got the punishment, those 10 men got punished, the verse says, and there died those men who spoke evil about the land. So on the land that they brought out evil speech about. So he concludes that no, you can't say it was a direct attack on God. It was a land, because the verse says that they spoke about the land. So the Talmud doesn't accept, or at least these rabbis, the second rabbis that step in, so they don't accept it because the verse doesn't side with the view that it was God. Because that's more of a what they call a drasha. You're taking a word which its literal meaning means they're stronger than us. So a rabbi comes along and wants to now say, no, the same word could also mean him, but that's not the plain meaning. It's better to go with the verse says clearly, plus you have an additional verse that clearly states why they were punished. So if there's a verse that clearly states why they were punished, how could the first rabbi say that no, it was because they spoke bad against God? Alright, that's the question. How could it be that the first rabbi would suggest that they spoke bad against God when clearly the verse says later on, what did they die? On what did they die? So the midbar, Numbers 14 says that there died those men who spoke bad about the land. So if the verse says that they died because they spoke bad about the land, how did that first rabbi say, no, it was because they were speaking against God?
Well, aren't the two a little bit synonymous? In other words, God promised them land, gave them the land, they spoke bad about the land, so isn't that by inference speaking bad about the one who provided it?
Yes. That is true. But they didn't, I guess they didn't isolate God as the one they were ridiculing in their words. They were speaking, the substance of the words is what it goes on. For example, that's what Maimonides, we read earlier, said that what's considered the dust of Lashon Hara? It's when there's implication involved. So that's not real Lashon Hara. So you see that Maimonides spells that out. So at best, you'd say it is the dust of Lashon Hara that they're speaking about God, but the real substance of what they're saying is the land. Which is actually an act of graciousness that God is not holding them. And the verse actually says, no, they spoke bad about the land. They didn't come out and say something outright against God. That they did not do. They were not that corrupt. Although there was an occasion in the desert where the Jews were complaining and the Torah said they spoke bad against Moses and against God. So it didn't seem from their words that they said that, but Moses comes back and says to them that I think he says that you're speaking against God. He's trying to let them know that you didn't see it yourself, but really you are. You really are. So you do have a precedent for that. That a person will not be saying something openly, but Moses will tell them you are speaking against God. Let me see if I can find that king. One second. And Josh, you're writing, it seems a different psychology is involved. Just clarify what you're saying there, Josh, all right? Let's see. No, actually, I'm wrong. It says openly. It's Numbers 21:4, and it says in 21:5 that the people spoke against God. It says openly, they spoke against God and Moshe. So it does say openly there. So therefore, there is a difference between when they spoke against God and then when they spoke against the land, even though the land is from God. Okay, so the Torah does make a distinction. So even though you're right, Doug, that the land is ultimately from God, but in terms of how the people verbalize it, it seems that there's a leniency if they did not isolate God. Okay, let me see what the words are there. And they immediately recognized they spoke against God, because when God sends the fiery serpents, they say in 21:7 that they came to Moses and they said to him, "We've sinned because we spoke against God and you." So they immediately recognized. That was the difference. Okay. But here, the people speaking against the land, so that's not something which carries with it the same level of severity, all right? That make sense?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right, the last verse actually says that they were killed because of the land. So that's pretty conclusive. There's no real rebuttal after that. Okay. Now, let's see. Right, now, if you want to take a look for next week, we'll continue. This is that talking about what the 10 tests were. The ten situations where they tried God, where they were rebellious. It goes now back to that point. And it says, it's a statement by Rabbi Judah. It's about two-thirds of the way down. Again, this is Erchin 15a. And it talks about the 10 trials that the Jews, the forefathers, had tested God. There's two by the Red Sea, and two regarding water, and two regarding the manna, two regarding the slav, the quail that they got in the desert, one regarding the golden calf, and one regarding the desert of Paran, that area. And then it goes into each one, and it shows what their flaw was. So this will be a good study in terms of the psychology of the people at that point. So let's pick up from there. We'll do that next week, and we'll go through them. And then there's a nice, interesting metaphor where God is talking to the sea after the sea swallows up, the Red Sea swallows up the Egyptians, and God, the people were worried, well, we came out on this side, maybe the Egyptians are coming up on the other side. That was one of the things that the sins that they had, that they were trying God. And so God says to the sea, spit up the Egyptians so the Jews can see them and they won't be worried about the Egyptians anymore. So the sea responds back and says, does any master, the sea says to God, does any master give a gift to a servant and then takes it back? So you've given me the Egyptians and now you're taking them back? So God says that, he says, I'll give you 1.5 times back people in another event, which is referring to the army of Sisera. See, by the Egyptians over here, there were 600 chariots, chosen chariots. So by Sisera, there were 900, which is 1.5 times the 600. So God says, I'll give you back in the future 1.5 times if you will obey me now. So then the sea now says back to God, can any servant ever really lay a claim on his master? I mean, the sea is saying, basically, your promise is good, but I can't come to you and claim anything from you. I'm just a servant. So God says, the river of Kishon will be a collateral. I will have to see what that means. And then the sea agreed, and it spat up all the Egyptians on the seashore. As it says, the Jews saw Egypt dead on the shores. So, of course, it's a metaphor, this whole discussion, but what is the whole discussion? So we'll see if we get to that next week, but that's something which you might want to look at and think into, all right?
Okay, Rabbi, do you know if there is a place to get a hold of Eric Henry?
You could try artscroll.com, artscroll.com. Take a look at that site.
Just didn't know if it was. I looked at Coming Here, and it's not one of the books listed.
See if they have it. I'm just thinking out loud. One second. Next week I have. Right now, in the morning, I think it's going to be a problem. I have a bar mitzvah next week in the morning. And that's going to be about this time. How is it if next week we switch the day? Because I have two things on Sunday next week. How is it for everybody? Are there people that can't make it?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow you.
Is another day that might work equally well for everybody as opposed to Sunday of next week? Because it may be tight Sunday next week.
What about Monday evening?
Monday evening could work. It could work. All right, let me get back to you during the weekend. It should be all right.
Okay. So we will not have class next Sunday.
Right, we won't do it Sunday. We'll do it maybe a Monday evening. That could be good.
Okay,
Sharna says all right. Let's see, Razora, I know it's going to be difficult because she's in Europe. Let's see.
Yeah, that would be problematic.
Let's see. The thing is called for. Don't do it at 12. Unless we make it earlier, but earlier is not good for you. It's already, what, 8? You're starting at 8:15 already. That's pretty early. What about if we do it, let's see if I do it afterwards. What about if we do it a little bit later on Sunday next week? Not 11:15 my time. JHS also said sorry for him, okay. Let's see, how is it later on in the morning for you, Doug?
We have a class from 9:45 till about 11 Pacific, and then we're good.
So that would mean 2 o'clock my time.
You're right, so...
Okay, let's do that. If that's okay with you, that'd be all right for me. And this way, Razora can join us also. Is that all right with you guys, too? You want to get back to me?
No, that should be all right. Can we move to 2:15 just to so that we don't accidentally run if Rabbi Moskowitz's class is long?
You want to do it 2:30?
Yeah, that'd be even better.
Okay. All right, so we'll do 2:30 next Sunday.
Okay, 2:30 Eastern, so 11:30 Pacific.
Right. Okay, so that should work out for everybody. All right, very good. All right, so, okay, Razora, you're welcome, sure, of course. All right, so we'll pick up here next Sunday at 2:30 Eastern.
Sounds great, Rabbi. Thanks so much.
Okay, great.
Very good.
Okay, if you have a problem getting the English, let me know, and I'll just translate it, and I'll send it to you in an email. All right, it's better if you have, of course, you know, you have it inside. This way we can jump around, and you'll have you have the source there. But if you can't, you let me know.
Okay.
All right, very good.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, good week to everybody. And let me just take Joshua. Let me just get back to Joshua. I had a question over here. So, Josh, if you're still... okay, it looks like you're still online, Josh. Let me just see your questions. You're saying, speaking about objects or people, or do they both have the same root, both trying to make reality line up with their fantasies? That's true, Josh. It's true. All right. right, let's, you know what, Josh? Remember the question. Let's pick it up next week with your question. All right, Josh? All righty. So good week to everybody.
Thanks, you too, Rabbi.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Bye-bye.